My name is Diego, and I work as a developer lead on the Entity Framework team at Microsoft. I have a horrible jet lag, and I took the wrong train to come here. But besides that, I'm super happy to be here with you. I hope you are enjoying the conference. In this talk, we are going to talk about Entity Framework 5, which is the version of Entity Framework that we released last year, together with Visual Studio 2012. There is another talk tomorrow about Entity Framework 6, in which I'm going to talk in more detail about the stuff that we are working on right now in the open source version of Entity Framework. How many of you use Entity Framework every day? And for the people that are not using Entity Framework every day, how many of you think you are very familiar with it? Okay. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time trying to explain what the Entity Framework is, but I'm going to spend a couple of slides explaining why we build it and why we keep improving it, and what is the role and what is the value that we think it brings to the table. So let's try to see if this works. So the agenda for today is those two slides. And then we are going to talk about the features that we have in Entity Framework 5 and how to understand what features you get depending on what version of Visual Studio you are using, what version of .NET you are targeting. Then we are going to demo. You are going to enjoy watching me fight with the demos for a while. And finally, we are going to talk, but very briefly, about Entity Framework 6. So first of all, to understand what we think Entity Framework is basically the default technology that you can use to access databases if you are programming in .NET. It's what Microsoft recommends using. It's not that there aren't other technologies that are very good at data access. It's only that we wanted to have a default experience that is good. And the reason we built it is basically, regardless of what kind of application or service you are developing, there is usually some part of that application that is about dealing with data, data from the user or data that you bring from somewhere else and you need to store or you need to service to the user. And you need to manipulate the data, save it, and do things like that. And when that code is difficult to write, when that code it doesn't perform or doesn't scale, your life sucks. And the less we make it suck, the better the platform is for you, and then you are going to choose the Microsoft platform for doing everything that you do and that adds value in your business. So that's our mission. I have been working on Entity Framework for 5.5 years. I started on the team when we were about to release the first version, and I have seen that based on the feedback that we got from customers and from developers, we have been able to improve it a lot, and we keep that mission to just make data access very, very simple in the Microsoft platform. So another thing that I wanted to mention, just to set a frame for many of the other things that I'm going to be talking about, is establish what is model first, database first, and code first very clearly. You have probably heard about those terms, right? Okay. So there are many approaches to use Entity Framework, and sometimes it's confusing. Sometimes it's difficult for people to choose the right one for what they do. And I want to explain that it usually boils down to two simple decisions. The first one is about something that usually you don't have a lot of control about it. Is whether you are going to be working with a new database or with an existing database. A new database can be simply a database that doesn't exist or a database that is empty and is waiting for your tables. An existing database can be something that your DBA gave you and told you, okay, don't call me unless you, if something goes wrong, don't call me unless you are using the database that I designed for you. Or it can be an existing application that has a database and you need to create a new application that works with the same data. The second decision that you need to make is something that is usually under your control and something that is almost a matter of taste. It's basically when you ask yourself the question, how do I think about a model? How do I think about modeling a domain, a business domain, into classes? And there are usually two kind of developers or two kind of teams. On one side, we have people that usually think about drawing diagrams and drawing boxes and lines to connect things, and that's the primary artifact of their design. And there are some people that, when they are thinking about modeling, are thinking about code, and the primary artifact of their design is the code. They may use a class diagram to visualize things and to share the contents of the model with other business people, for instance, to get feedback, but the primary artifact is the code. So we have approaches that work with both. And the first cell in the matrix is basically if you have a new database and you are using a designer, we have a technology that is called Model First that is basically going to take a model that you draw from scratch in a diagram and it's going to generate automatically a database for you. And also it's going to generate some classes that your application is going to interact with for your entities. We have Database First, which is a technology that is in the same tooling. You can point it to an existing database and it's going to just retrieve all the schema of that database and it's going to generate a default model that you can later tweak. And that one is also going to generate classes for your application in the same way. And on the right side, we have Code First. We have the technologies that allow you to just write code, write some classes, optionally also specify some details about how you want those classes to be mapped to the database or how you want properties to behave or to be restricted. Like, for instance, you want to specify that your string has to be maximum 100 characters. And you specify that code and we can generate the database at runtime for you in that case. But Code First actually is all about specifying the model, and it's possible to use Code First with an existing database. So we created a tool that currently is part of a download that you have to go to the Visual Studio Gallery to get. That is called the EF Power Tools. That is also a reverse engineering tool, but instead of generating an EDMX, like an XML artifact with your model, it's going to take the schema of the database and it's going to generate classes and Code First API calls to specify the model. So once I set this frame, we're going to start to talk about EF5. So EF5, there are several parts to EF5, and they all depend on each other, and they are all interconnected. The primary thing that we talk about when we say EF5 is the Entity Framework NuGet package that has over, I think, 1 million downloads now. This package contains a couple of assemblies that have the implementation of the main APIs that we recommend people to use, the DBContext API and CodeFirst. And there are two versions of, that assembly, two versions. One is for .NET 4.5, and the other one is for .NET 4. And the reason for that is that there is another part of the Entity Framework that is not included in that NuGet package in Entity Framework 5. And instead, it's included in .NET. That's where the original version of Entity Framework was released. It was just a component of .NET, an assembly in .NET. And every time we want to introduce any interesting functionality in Entity Framework, we basically need to release a new version of .NET, or we need to basically wait until the next version of .NET is released so that we can include it there. So all the core functionality is there, and in .NET 4.5, actually, we included a few interesting features that people were asking for, like support for enum properties, support for special types, support for table value functions on link. And if you don't get the .NET 4.5 bits, you don't get that functionality. However, the NuGet package has a version that works, is backwards compatible with 4.0. It just doesn't have that functionality. And finally, we have another component in the Entity Framework that is the designer, that ships with Visual Studio, and it also has the same characteristic that is always backwards compatible, because you can create a project in Visual Studio 2012 that targets .NET 3.5. We have to support .NET 3.5, which contains the first version of EF in the designer. We just need to show you only the options that are available for that version of .NET. So these three elements, what we ship in NuGet, what we ship in the framework, and what we ship in Visual Studio, are all part of EF. And the reality is that if you want to get the most complete version, the latest and greatest features and everything, you need Visual Studio 2012. That's where everything comes. You get to program against the .NET 4.5 APIs. You get the version of the assembly in the NuGet package that has all that functionality, and you get the latest version of the designer. Of course, if you want to use Visual Studio 2010, there are things that still work. It's just that you need more manual steps, and you don't get all the features. Okay, so what are the major features in EF5? There are some features that are oriented to everybody. Basically, anybody that uses EF can take advantage of them, and are usually part of the runtime. That includes support for enum properties, support for special properties, and queries over special types, and a couple of performance improvements that we included in EF5. Those are usually implemented across the .NET bits, the parts that are in .NET, in the core functionality, and the NuGet package. There is also a set of features that are usually available only if you are doing something like database first or even model first. That is because either they require tooling or because they are actual improvements on the tooling itself. For instance, to use TBFs, we don't have code first functionality that can create or help you define a table value function. But if you have a table value function in the database and you are using database first, we can import that into the model using the designer, and you can start writing link queries against it. Without the tooling, it's not a usable, I mean, it's still in the runtime, but it's not a usable feature. We also have other features that are improvements in the designer itself, like the ability to break down your model into multiple parts and, for instance, use colorization for the shapes of the model, or use multiple diagrams in the same EDMX file to separate things and to organize your model. And we have also the ability to bring all the stored procedures from your database in one shot, just with the selection list. And another thing that we changed that is quite fundamental is that we changed the default code generation that you get if you're using the designer to generate DB context and POCO classes, which is a big departure from what we had before. So let's start with the demo. This is what I'm going to build is a simple application that is a park finder. It's basically the user can type a location, the name of a location, and it's going to use the Bing Maps API to geocode that location. It's going to bring me the coordinates. Then I'm going to do a search on the database using EF and special support to find parks that are within the proximity of that location that the user typed. And I'm going to bring them, I'm going to display them in a map, and I'm going to display them in a grid also. So wish me luck with this. So one thing, I don't know if somebody is controlling this screen, but I have the timer for how much it remains of my speak and of my talk, and it's not updating. So if somebody can start it, I don't know if there is anybody there. So let's start here. I'm going to start from scratch, basically creating a standard MVC application, MVC4, and I'm going to call it parkfinder.web. Can people see the screen? Can they read? Even people on the back? Yes? Okay. You can complain if you don't read, and I'll try to do something about it. Okay, so I'm going to create this, and I'm going to pick the Web API template because I'm going to create a Web API service. So this is going to take some time because when you create one of these projects, it's usually loading some dependencies, it's bringing some NuGet packages actually into the project by default. So as you can see in the lower left corner, it's telling you everything that is being added. And one of the things that this Web API template adds by default is entity framework, the NuGet package. So this starts with an empty solution. Basically, it has a couple of controllers, but for things that are there by default, I'm going to create a new model by creating a class here. And I'm not going to type a lot because I don't want to waste time. So I wrote a few snippets here. And I'm going to resolve some dependencies. OK, so here what I have is basically a park class. Can people still read, or should I increase the zoom? Can people on the back read this? Is it OK? Cool. So it's a park object that has an ID, a name, a description, and a location. This location is of a type that is called DBGeography. That is one of the new types that we introduced in Native Framework 5. There is DBGeography and there is DBGeometry. That is, they use different set of like coordinate systems. And this one is used, basically, it can be used to represent a point in a map. So that's the way we are going to use it today. So once I have this model, I can build so that all the tooling is going to pick up these classes. And now I can use the default scaffolding that comes with MVC and Web API to create a default controller for this. So I'm going to add a controller. And I'm going to call it the Parks controller because it's going to deal with the Park class. And one of the options I have here is to create an API controller using EF. I'm going to pick a park. And I'm also going to ask this tool to create the default context based on this model. So I'm going to say park finder context. So this is a very nice point of integration between EF and MVC. It really makes things very, very easy. So I get the controller generated automatically with some default implementation for some of the operations. Like if I want to get all the parks, this is going to basically ask the context for the parks as enumerable. Then I have another operation here that can get a specific park by ID. And a few more that are used to do updates, inserts, and deletes. And then on the model folder, it created a context for me that right now it only contains parks. I'm going to add this other type that I had there, this events. Sorry. So now I can compile this, and I can just start it. And I have this default Web API service already running. I'm going to use a tool called Fiddler. For people that are not familiar with it, it's basically something that lets me manufacture an HTTP request, send it to this service, just get the answer from it and represent it graphically. So I actually want the URL here because every time I get a different random port, to put it here. And the address for this new controller is parks. So I'm going to execute this. And this first request is going to, unless I made a mistake, it's going to take some time, because under the hood, what this is doing is creating the database that doesn't exist yet, based on the model, on the class that I wrote. So now that I have it, I can see that it returned a JSON package, but it's an empty one because I don't have any data, really. But I can go back to Visual Studio and check that I have this connection here created for a database that was just created for this application. And I have a table with parks that is empty. So now I would like to close this just in case. But I want to bring some data for this database, and the easiest way to do it is to use migrations. That is another technology that is not new in EF5, but it was improved in Entity Framework 5. We actually introduced that in Entity Framework 4.3. And the way to introduce migrations is to use this console. I'm going to say enable migrations. This is a PowerShell command that comes with the Entity Framework package. I can run it from here. And it's going to do a few modifications on my project. The first thing that it does is that it creates this migrations folder here. And it's going to create a couple of files. So the first one is the migration configuration that is based on my context class. And this one just sets a few initial things, and it has this seed method that I can fill with data. This other class here is basically my initial migration. When I enabled this migration feature, it detected that I already had a database that was created with other option, and so it decided to basically scaffold that schema of the database using this Fluent API that basically defines two tables and defines all the columns in those tables, defines the primary keys, foreign keys, and some indexes on the same columns that are using the foreign keys. So going back to the configuration, I would like to fill this seed method. And I have another snippet that is quite complicated. What I have here is basically I'm creating a few instances of parks, giving them names, giving them location. To create a location, I usually have to invoke this factory method that takes a string with a format that is called the well-known text format for spatial types. It's a standard thing that SQL Server uses, but other databases that support spatial use the same format. And I have descriptions for all these parks. So unless I'm forgetting anything, I think I can just execute this migration thing, and it's going to basically find that the database is already, the database schema is already up to date, but it doesn't contain any data, so it's going to execute this method. What this method is going to do actually here, this other update extension method that we define here, is going to try to find things in the database, in the table, matching by name, because I'm passing this lambda expression here. And if it finds something that matches the same value that I have in the name property here, then it's going to look for any differences in the other properties, and it's going to send an update to the database. But if it doesn't find anything that matches this, it's going to just send an insert. So this method, I use it to keep the database always with seed data that I can use to start the application. So the way to execute this automatically is to do update database command. So unless I forgot something, if I execute this URL again, now I should be able to see some data. Yes, okay. Here is the JSON message with all the data that I have in the database. So let me remember what comes next. Okay, showing all the data from the database is not interesting. So I want to create some operation in the controller that is going to allow me to get parks based on a coordinate. So let's go to the controller. And I can add an operation here. So basically here, what I'm doing is I have this operation that is going to take a couple of parameters as decimal numbers, and it's going to manufacture a point with that, and then it's going to create a geography instance with that. And now I need to basically query for something that is within the proximity of that point. So the way I do that is I can write a link query that says from, let me specify park in DB parks, where p.location, that is the name of the property, distance from this other location that is my parameter is less than, and because this API is in meters, I can use 10,000 to say 10 kilometers. And now that I have this query defined, I can just say return the query that traduced to or materialize in a list. So let me copy this from here. Because I now want to execute this and I want to use Fiddler to hit that URI. Okay, so should we working already? Okay, now I get in this results only. I had actually, if you look at the C data, I had a few parks from Seattle and a few parks from New York. And now I'm getting only the parks from Seattle because I use more or less the coordinates of the building where I work on. So now that I have created that, I can start using it for something more interesting. So let's create another application that is going to be a client of this web API. I want to create a Windows Store application because the talk is about creating applications for different platforms with the same technology. I'm going to call it parkfinder.modern. And it's just an empty Windows Store application. Okay, so the first thing I need to do on this application is to add a few references that I'm going to need. As I explained before, I'm going to be calling the Bing API to do the geocoding of a place given a name. And in order to do that, I need to reference a few components. So I need to reference Bing Maps toolkit or SDK for Windows Store apps, and I also need to reference the C++ runtime because the first one has a dependency on this. I'm going to need to also change the architecture of the application to be specific because that's a requirement for the Bing API currently. And because I'm using JSON for the serialization format, I also need to add a NuGet package for a JSON parser. And there is a very good one that is free and is in NuGet, and it's one of the most downloaded packages in NuGet, that is JSON.net. So I'm just going to install that. And the other thing that I need to add here is a service reference to the geocoding API. I have the URL here. If you look at this, it just contains a couple of methods to do a geocode and to do a reverse geocode that is basically obtain a name based on coordinates. And I'm going to call this the Bing API. Or was it? Yeah. So now that I did that, those are the requirements. I need to put something in my window. Because this talk is not really about designing UI, and because I don't know how to design a UI, I just brought some code for that. So let me find what I'm looking for. So I'm going to just replace everything that is in here by default with a new XAML file. Basically, what I have here is a text. Well, I can show you graphically what it has. But it has this search box, and then it has a map that is going to appear here. And then it has a grid that is going to show the results. The next thing I need to do is to write some code to wire up everything to work. For instance, I'm going to need a model. I'm going to need classes to materialize when I'm deserializing the JSON message. This is very similar to the model that I had in the other version on the server. It's only that the instance of DBGeography, I'm just instantiating this as my own type that I'm defining here. And the only payload that this geography instance is going to have is the well-known text. It's the thing that usually serializes everywhere when you are working with these types. And I included some logic in some properties here so that I can basically parse this formatting of the well-known text and obtain latitude and longitude properties out of it. But it's very simple, it's just a hack. So the next thing I'm going to need is I'm going to need to invoke the geocode API. I'm going to resolve a few namespaces here. This is also a very simple code that I can fix a bit, but I'm not going to fix it completely. Basically, it takes the search and it creates an invocation. It creates a package that I'm going to use to invoke the in this case, the Bing Maps API to get latitude and longitude. And later, potentially I can get many results, but I'm just going to assume that the first one is the one that I'm looking for. It's usually the best one. The other thing that I need to do is to create a code that is going to call the web API that I have on the other instance of Visual Studio. And here I do a few things. I get an instance of geolocation that is going to be generated by this method here. I take it as a parameter. And I need to pass that to my URI, because I have the service working in that URI right now. And then after that, I'm going to use some code to just build a string with the right format for the URI. And basically, I'm going to query asynchronously that service to get the list of parks that are within a proximity range. And once I do that, I'm going to just add a few patch pins into the map and draw the grid with the contents. So I think I still need to do one more thing, that is to wire up the event of the button and to invoke all this code. So this should be just that. And if this compiles, I think it should already work. Okay. So when I start an application, this is not hitting any service yet, but if I write something like Hoboken, because I just learned in the train that there is a place called Hoboken here, but that there is a place in New Jersey that is called the same, and I do search, this is going to point me to New York, and it's going to show me the parks from New York. If I say Seattle here, sorry, it's going to make the call to the web API that I have in the other Visual Studio, and it's going to bring me the parts from there, and it's going to put them in the screen. So this is very simple. It's not an application that, it's not extremely simple, but it's not an application that would take weeks for anybody to write. And it's nice to see that all those pieces are coming together. It's like Web API, the integration of Web API and Entity Framework make it super easy to get a service running. And then you can create an application like this relatively easily and invoke that service to show this information. So let's see. The next thing I would like to do is to evolve this service. I want to add more data. So the way I'm going to do that is taking advantage of migrations. So the first thing I want to do is just go ahead and add a property. I want people to be able to rate parks and to say, OK, this is my favorite park, this is my not-so-favorite park. So I'm going to just add a property here that is of type integer and is a rating. So if I now run the application, everything seems to work. And I'm going to just start the Windows Store application. I'm going to type something. It shows me the map. But now I get an exception that says basically that the context has changed, like the model represented by that context has changed since the last time we updated the database, and that we should use migrations to keep the database up to date. So let's do that. Every time I add a property like this, what I can do is basically add a new migration step to represent that change that I can now apply to other instances of the database. So I'm going to say add migration. I'm going to name it after the property that I just added, add migration rating. What this is going to do is going to it's going to basically do a best guess of what changed in my model, and it's going to generate like a data schema modification script. In this case, what it's doing is just adding an integer column called rating to the table parks, and that should be all right. Now, the other thing I had is in the configuration, I had some seed data, right? So I want to add some ratings already in the seed data. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take advantage of this nice feature in Visual Studio. I'm going to add ratings for everybody. But now I'm going to pick a couple of parks to make them my favorite. So let's say I give you a rating of 3 to the volunteer park and a rating of 5 to Gasworks. So now I want to also evolve the UI of the application, the Windows Store application, because otherwise it's not going to show this information. It's going to be fine because it's using JSON to serialize the format, and the JSON deserializer is just not going to care if it cannot match all the properties. But if I update the application, it's going to work better. I'm going to take advantage of this new data. So the first thing that I need to do is add this property also on my model here. Sorry. Oh, I need to stop it. So it's an integer, and the name is rating. The other thing I need to do is to change the SAML a bit, because right now I don't have a place to show this rating. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to replace this line here with some code that I prepared. If I can find it, it was here. It's basically the same. It has the name, but it concatenates. It's a stack panel that concatenates the name and the rating with parentheses, and that's it. So if I'm correct, I think this should already work. So I can run the service. I should be able to run the application. Nope, I did something wrong. Oh, yeah, I know what I forgot to do. So I added that migration, but I forgot to update the database with the details of that migration. In order to get all the data and even the new ratings that I wrote, I need to update the database, and that I do it just saying. And I'm going to use an option here that is verbose, that is going to show exactly what schema modification instructions sent to the database. So if you look here, it has an alter table that adds this rating column. And that's it. And it's going to execute the seed method again. So let's execute this. Just going to restart this, just in case. Interesting. Did crash. Maybe my connection to the internet is not so good. Because if it blocks here, it's usually blocking on trying to get the map. Let's see if I... Everything is connected here. I hope it's just a temporary issue. Yep. Okay, now it brings the four parks that belong in Seattle, and it has the 3 stars, 0 stars, 5 stars. Okay. So what else can I do here? Let's add more data. One of the features that I mentioned that people ask the most for this version of Entity Framework is support for enums. So I'm going to add an enum here just because I have to. So let's add park type. And let's add this. Park type property here. And because I'm again updating the model, I need to add another migration for it. Sorry. Okay, this created a migration, and let's update the database with it. In this case, my enum has a default value. It's not a nullable enum, so the default value is going to be 0, as with all enums. And 0 maps to one of the options in the enum that I think is the state park. So basically, by not providing any seed data, I made all the parks state parks. But the thing is, one of the things that I wanted to demo also is that I can add, well, in migrations, first of all, I can basically update the database to any a migration step that I want. So one thing I could do is to revert the change that I just made and say update database and use the target migration and use rating as a target migration. Now, that is going to bring back, actually, let's do this again, but use B-rolls. Verbose is going to show me that it's going to basically drop the column. So it's going to do a bunch of things here. Basically, it's going to get rid of any dependencies like foreign key constraints that are related to the column, and it's going to drop the column. But the other thing I can do is to make this more complete. For instance, one thing that we support, usually Entity-Fangor doesn't reason about indexes, but we support creating indexes on the migration script because this is tied to the description of the database. So I'm going to add a create index here. The table is DBO parks, and the column is park type. And then the name of the index itself is going to be something that I choose, like index park type. And then if I want migrations to be able to revert this change correctly the next time, I need to also add something in the downside of the migration script, which is the one that gets executed every time I go back to another version. And here I need to drop the index. I can use almost the same parameters here. I think it's just the name on the table and the name. Yes. So now I can do at the database with verbose, and this is going to bring this back to the version of the database that contains park type, and it's going to script the alter table and then script the create index for me. And if I go back, it's going to do the same, but in reverse, it's going to drop the index. Okay, so let's just keep it up to date, and we're going to hit it with Fiddler to make sure that everything is working. Ah, probably I'm not running it. Did it work? Yep. Okay, this is not up to date because I'm not running it. Anyway, this is not important in the demo. So the next thing I can do is add some new code. And for instance, I want to invoke a store procedure in this web API. And the way I can do that, basically the CodeFirst API doesn't have support in EF5 to invoke store procedures directly or to represent or to define them. But we can do some workarounds. So what I'm going to do is add an empty migration. And here I have some code I can add. This is basically the ability to execute any arbitrary SQL as part of a migration step. If I want to do this correctly, I also need to create a version for drop. What I'm going to do is just change this a bit. Just need a name. And what I'm also going to do is create some code to invoke this store procedure. I can go to the controller and create a new method. Sorry. My keyboard, my fingers. This is just a method that takes a min rating parameter. I can write the code for this. Like bar parks is going to be db.parks. This is another nice feature in the DB context API that allows me to write like a raw SQL query, but materialize still the same objects that I'm using in the model. So all I need to do here is invoke the store procedure with the parameter, and then I'm going to pass the min rating parameter that I am taking here, and then I'm going to just materialize a list. Well, I should be able to execute this already. And I can put this in Fiddler and see how it goes. Okay, so it basically gave me the two parts that have ratings. I got every part that has a rating greater than 3 or equal to 3. So I'm getting the two that had ratings. Okay, so what else we can do here? Let me remember. What is the next step? Okay, so the next step is basically to show you that more or less the same things can be done without using call first. I'm going to go in the completely opposite way with database first. And in order to do that, I'm just going to restart this, and I'm going to delete a bunch of stuff that I have been doing here. For instance, I'm going to remove the migrations folder because migrations only work for code first. I'm going to also get rid of the model that I created and the context that I created. And I'm also going to update the config because I want to remove one of the connections that got created here automatically. In database first, I'm just going to say, OK, add new item. And I'm going to pick from the data tab an ad.net data model. I'm going to call this the ParkFinder model. And I'm going to point it to an existing database. It's basically create a connection using, in this case, SQL Express, the local SQL Express that I have here, and use the ParkFinder database that is there. I'm going to rename this to context because I want everything to just continue working. And here it's going to show me a few tables. I added some additional tables in this version of the database. Sorry, like this. And I have also the same store procedure, get parts by rating, that I defined in the migration. I'm going to just import that store procedure directly. So this is going to open the designer with a model based on that database. I'm going to zoom out a bit, arrange things. Okay, so let me show you some of the features of the designer. One of the things that you can do, as I said, is colorize some of the shapes. And you can also use multiple diagrams. In this database, there are two areas of the database that are distinct, and I would like to partition that by having them in different diagrams. So I'm going to select these two entities. I'm going to just say, move to new diagram. And then this is going to create a diagram that only contains the parts and the events. However, in my previous diagram, it actually made sense to have the parks as an external dependency for this other table. So I'm going to say include related. And that is going to bring back parks, but parks alone. And now I can say, OK, this is actually an external dependency. So I'm going to paint it on a different color. And let's say it's less relevant to the model. So I'm just going to paint it in gray. And that is the kind of improvements that we made on the designer. besides the look and feel that is also more, I'm not allowed to say that word, but it's more modern and fluent or whatever. The important thing besides showing you this in the designer is we need to get this store procedure updated. When I put the checkbox on the store procedure, it created already a function import for me. A function import is basically how a store procedure is mapped into an entity framework model. But one thing that this guy is doing automatically is looking at the results and is just creating a new type that has the shape of the results for that store procedure. However, I know that because I wrote the store procedure, that the shape matches park, so I just want to use results that are of the park type. So with that updated, the only thing I can do to make this better is to change the implementation of this method on the controller. Because I'm using database first in this case, I have this ability to do function imports, and I get a strongly typed API to get the parks, to invoke the store procedure, basically. I basically get this method created for me, so I can just invoke it and do the same thing. So with this last change, I believe this should already be able to run. Okay, I'm going to hit it with Fiddler now. And okay, with the new implementation of that store procedure, I'm now invoking the same model. It's just that now it's not using call first, it's database first, but the runtime is the same. There are only very few differences between the capabilities of call first and database first. So it's mostly a matter of taste. And even if there are differences in the future, we are going to be removing those differences. For instance, in Entity Framework 6, we are adding the ability to invoke store procedures from code first and to define how you want the store procedures to look like. So this is going to stop being a reason to pick database first or model first instead of code first. So that's, I think, all I had for the demo. Let me check that I'm not forgetting anything. Oh, yes, I'm forgetting something very interesting. The other thing I can do, the talk is about using the same model for different kind of applications. So one thing I can do is create the web version of the same application. And the simplest thing I can do for that is just rewrite the home view that the MVC application creates, that nice screen that I get here. I'm going to replace it with my own code that I wrote here. So what this is going to do, it has more or less the same UI. It has a search box, a text box, and then when I click on the button for the text box, it's going to invoke this method in JavaScript that is going to invoke the Bing API using the RESTful API that they have. And it's going to, when the results from that API are obtained, it's going to basically invoke this other method that is going to load the parks. So it's basically it creates a location based on the latitude and longitude that it got, and it's going to invoke this other method to load the parks. Load parks is basically a call on the web API again, but using JavaScript in this case. It's going to use the data that it gets back from the web API call to add some patch pins on the map, and I haven't done the code to create a grid, but it would be more of the same code. So let's try to write to run this and see if it works. Okay, so it added the map, and now it added the two patch pins here. Okay, so that was the end of the demo. So the point that I want to get across is basically you have this single entry framework runtime, and you have these two options. If you are a code-centric developer or you are a designer-centric developer, you can pick whatever, and you are going to get more or less the same capabilities. So let's talk about something that is more difficult to demo, which is the performance improvements that we did on NT Framework 5. So the main thing that we did is basically improve the performance of Link. So let me show you, this is a super simple, this probably the simplest Link query that I can think of, that is going to obtain a person from the people's entity set based on the key of that person, the ID of that person. The only thing that is wrong about this query, it's not necessarily wrong, but it can make things slow, is that every time we see this query in the code, we need to deal with something that the compiler generates for us, that is an expression tree, a link expression tree. We need to parse that link expression tree. We need to convert it to a canonical representation that we use internally in Entity Framework to also represent expression trees. We need to go through the Entity Framework mapping to get another version of the expression tree that is now expressed in terms of the database schema that is not necessarily the same as the model that you have on your classes. And after that, we have to send it to the AD.NET provider in order for that AD.NET provider to generate SQL that is native to the database. And finally, we can execute that code. And the whole process is relatively expensive. If you have to do it only one or twice in your application, it doesn't matter. But if it is a web application and every page that you request is going to be running this kind of code, it can become an issue. So from the very beginning, when we released the first version of Entity Framework and also the first version of Link to SQL, we added this abstraction that is called compile query. What it does, basically, this I compiled this only in PowerPoint, so the code is difficult enough that I may have made a mistake there. Basically, it allows you to capture the same query inside the Lambda expression. And because it's always the same delegate that you are going to obtain, you can invoke that delegate many times. And only the first time you invoke the delegate, the translation is going to happen. The whole process that I described before is going to happen. The second time is going to basically say, OK, I know I already translated the query. I know what the SQL is. And I'm just going to execute the SQL, which is much faster. So this is a nice performance optimization, and it's excellent. The only problem with it is that it's horrible. Like, the code is horrible. We got very strong feedback, especially from big customers, that if they wanted to get reasonable performance from Link, if they had to do this for many, many queries, it was completely unmaintainable code for them. So what we try to do in Entity Framework 5 is to reduce the need to write compile queries. And we did that by basically, in the process of doing the translation, the first step of the translation, we, at the same time that we are creating the internal representation of the expression tree, we create a key that we can then use to do a lookup the second time and find that maybe we already know the translation of this query. So it's not as fast as having the instance of your delegate and just invoking it again, but it's much faster than going through the whole process of translating the expression. So what we do now is, by default, we cache link queries, and we always try to find if there is already a match in the query cache. The other improvement that we made is, if you look at this ID parameter that I'm passing, is a free variable that I'm passing to the expression tree. The way we used to obtain the value of that ID in order to pass it to the server, it was very expensive. We basically get from the compiler an expression that is an access to that variable, and we used to just compile the expression and then invoke the compile delegate that we obtain after compiling it. And that tends to be expensive, but it's worse because we have to do it every time we see this query again, even if it is the same line of code in multiple different requests of the web application. We are seeing it again, and we don't know that this is something that we could have cached somehow. we need to create the delegate again, compiling the expression into IL, which is a very expensive process. So we realized that it was actually much, much faster in this case, although it's counterintuitive to use reflection to obtain the value. And it's orders of magnitude much faster. So the result of this can be measured in this micro benchmark. This, I call it a micro benchmark because it's a super targeted test that is used to just measure the overhead of doing the translation. And it's a very common benchmark that actually the Dapper guys wrote to measure how much entity framework used to suck in the previous version and how much faster Dapper is. But the truth is that I asked them the other day to update the data in their website because they don't have the version from .NET 4.5. If you look at the link to entities area of the chart, you see the orange is the performance of .NET 4.0 and the blue one is the performance of .NET 4.5 bits with the cache and with the optimization of a parameter evaluation. And it's basically more than 5 times faster now. And one of the cool things about this performance improvement is that even if you have a .NET 4.0 application, like an Entity Framework 4 application, if you install .NET 4.5, you are going to obtain this kind of benefit for free. You don't need to even recompile the application. It's just the version of the framework under your feet change and it's faster. So this is, as I said, a very targeted micro benchmark that is used to measure this difference. So the results are exaggerated. But there is an end-to-end test that we run internally that is, you can think about it as a version of the classic pet shop benchmark. And we use it to basically control that we are not regressing the performance of Entity Framework. And this is the history of the time when we checked in the autocompile queries change on Entity Framework is the first time the curve goes up. And the second one is when we checked in the change to performance evaluation, sorry, to parameter evaluation. And in the end, we found that in this particular application that should reflect more or less what you see in a real world application, the performance is 67% faster just by updating .NET. So that's all I had for Entity Framework 5. I have also this slide only for Entity Framework 6, and I just want to talk today about the fact that we went open source last year. We are very happy to be open source. We are developing our new code base in a Git repository hosted in CodePlex, and we are taking contributions. So what we found is that people are ramping up on providing contributions. They have already checked in a few nice small features, and some people are working on something bigger. But in general, the whole process has improved. It's like even the feedback that we get is much higher quality because people can now debug the Entity Framework code very easily. They can just download it and use it. And the other thing that I want to mention is that when we release in RTM, more or less mid of this year, the plan is that although we are developing as an open source project, it's going to be a traditional Microsoft product. So it's going to have a Microsoft license, it's going to have the same level of support of any Microsoft product, the same branding and all that. The features that we are working on are basically in this list. Asynchronous query and save allows you to leverage the new feature in the language, the wait pattern, to make sure that on the server you are not wasting a thread every time you are waiting for a database server to return results. The other thing that is super cool is that because now all the code that we used to ship as part of .NET, we moved that into the NuGet package, and we have a copy of that code, is that all the features that used to work only in .NET 4.5 work against .NET 4.0 now. So you get the same bits. The only difference between the .NET 4.5 and the .NET 4.0 version of EF6 is async, because we don't have the API that we need on 4.0. The other thing that is super important that we do is connection resiliency. This is basically a feature that we are building for using SQL Azure more easily. In SQL Azure, if you have how many people have tried SQL Azure here? Okay, quite a few, five, six, maybe. So one of the difficulties is that it can drop your connection just to keep the service working, or maybe even because the connection is not as stable. So you usually need to write a lot of defensive code to catch exceptions and to retry the database operations. With Identity Framework 6, in most cases, you are not going to need to do that anymore, because we can control and we can retry for you. The other thing that we are doing that is very interesting is custom conventions for code first. That is basically if you are following some pattern that is not the one that we expect in the names of the columns, let's say, or the names of the tables in your database, or if you want, for instance, all the decimal properties in your model to be of some specific precision, you can just write a convention, your own convention, and apply it to the model. And we are going to basically apply your code in every time we see a pattern match. The other thing that we are doing is adding stored procedure support. We already released Alpha 3 the other day, last week, and we have a support for insert, update, and delete operations using stored procedures in CodeFirst there. We are trying to fit also invoking TBFs and invoking stored procedures in general from the CodeFirst and the DBContext API. We are not completely sure that we are going to get it on time for EF6. And finally, the last item is about an improvement in the designer, which is to basically reflect that matrix that I showed in the beginning, in which you say you can have an existing database or a new database. You may want to go with the designer, or you may want to go to code first. Have all those options in the wizard that you run initially, and integrate all the functionality that today we ship in the EF Power Tools into the designer, so that you can reverse engineer, for instance, an existing database into code first, and also do something that is called pre-generated views automatically. I don't know if everybody is familiar with that. So that's all I had. I have just a slide with resources. We have a user voice site that people use to vote for their favorite feature. EF.mswish.net is a shortcut for the URL. We have an MSDN page that you can use to learn about EF. It is going to give you, it has some videos that you can use to learn from the very beginning, or it also has some more detailed documentation about more advanced features. And the main place where we are doing all the development and where we are gathering bug tracking and discussions and feedback is Codeplex. Our site is entityframework.codeplex.com. And I have included a few ways you can follow the team or even myself. I don't tweet a lot and I don't write many blog posts, but I still have those. So that's all.